This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
And there's only one thing that I'm afraid of, and that's the people in elected office taking away my rights. I'm not afraid of the crook that's going to come to my door, because if my dogs don't get him, I will. And it's my job to defend myself. It's not your job to protect me. It's not your job to defend me. It's your job to protect the Constitution and protect my rights to defend myself.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have this far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard. A lot of things going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. I'm really happy to have you with us. And all of you new Californians and everybody around the United States, welcome aboard. We got a lot to talk about here on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com. That's a21r.com. And of course, newcaliforniastate.com. newcaliforniastate.com and ncs51.com. The two websites are up and running right now, and there's tons of information for you. If you want to know about what's going on with New California, if you're an expat living in Michigan or Idaho or Texas, and you're thinking about coming back to New California, you're more than welcome. Anyway, a lot of things going on, of course, with Donald Trump, the president, just sort of never-ending coronavirus business and what's been happening with China. But with us right now is our own Chris Street, leading economist for New California, of course, and certainly helping us out in terms of the finances about what that looks like. He's been spot on about this whole fiscal situation that economic situation and circumstances that the world finds itself in, predicted this many, many years ago, and here we are right in the middle of it. So, Chris, what say you right now about what's going on with the economy and everything else?
Well, Paul, I think this is the times they are changing. You know, this is a process that, like big waves that hit the beach, and you can call it a tsunami or whatever, and it goes out, and there's all this devastation, and the waves work again, not as big and
that's maybe right.
More helpful. But we're in a process of creative destruction. A lot of people don't like capitalism because there's change. The problem without change is you get what you have on you know, the CCP, what I call the CCP virus. Let's face it, you know, calling it COVID is a joke because it just shows you the power of China to manipulate big globalist organizations to deny they have any responsibility. But clearly, we are in a time of change. It's very, very painful. You know, a lot of people have lost their life savings. You know, they're running down what they have in their bank account. They're maxing out their credit cards. But, you know, it's a self-inflicted wound. You know, it was the American government that did this to you when Barack Obama said, you know, those manufacturing jobs, they're never coming back.
Yeah.
What he said is, your economy is never coming back, and eventually you'll have such a crash, and we'll just learn to deal with it. Maybe we'll send you some, you know, some pennies, and you'll feel okay for the dollars you lost.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I want to commend you for all the great work you've done over the years since then. And you know, this whole setup for where we are at right now has been many, many, many years in the making. And constructed by the globalists, and of course, with China now with the Chinese virus, the CCV, Communist Chinese virus, is a very real thing. Of course, a very real thing out there in the world. So, what's this going to look like? The rebuild, first of all, the takedown, which is what's happening right now. What's that looking like in the next say 60 days?
Well, Paul, I'm a believer that you had to go through some kind of timeout like this to address the situation. You know, it's really 50% of it was in New York, but last I checked, you know, the roads and there are, you know, air flights out of New York, so it spread pretty rapidly. This was going to happen sometime. It was metastasized by the fact that China I'll give you some statistics. If China had told the world 3 weeks earlier, you would have reduced the number of cases by 95%. If they told the world 2 weeks earlier, you would have reduced the number of cases by, if you would have 3 weeks, 90%, 2 weeks, 45%, and 1 week, 26%. So, size and reach breakout. Where you are right now, you've had a deep, deep challenge to the economy. But I think you're turning the corner. It's going to be a slow change, but you're going to have a huge third quarter boost coming out of here. And then the question is, what happens next?
Do you see at any point civil unrest?
I think there's civil unrest. They just happen to be, you know, sheltering in place right now. one thing that, I mean, they haven't gone out yet. They're going to go out, and people kind of go in. They have a whole name for it, you know, lockdown fatigue. But when they start going out and they find out their world has changed and, you know, their taxes are going to go up and all that kind of stuff. I live here in California. Where literally they're going to try to overturn Prop 13 in this kind of a mess. Can you imagine that? And, of course, I understand it's only going to be about commercial buildings and apartments, right? Well, I don't think so.
Because once
they get rid of that, they'll get rid of the one for individuals. You know, government looks at this as we are the perfect vehicle to solve the problem. That just means we need to spend. They're always looking for something to spend. And, of course, when you spend, you got to borrow. The problem with this, Paul, is they've actually, you know, killed the goose that lays the egg. We'll see how it turns out for government at the end of this crisis. But I've said from the start that California was in deep financial trouble due to the change. The economy was moving away from globalism back to, you know, what was called more localism. But add this the anger and the people understanding how much they've been hurt by China, and I think we're in for a radical change. And for the state of California, which lives the globalist life, progressives live the globalist life. It's all about big cities. It's all about import export. You know, we throw away those people in agriculture and manufacturing, and you know, we have cheap Uber drivers. They're illegal aliens. You know, we got it all going on. That group is the target. And I thought it would be sort of a couple years to take them out. They're under the microscope right now, and they're melting quickly.
Yeah. A lot of people don't understand how that kind of works when behaviors are confronted, you know, especially illegal behaviors, and illegal aliens who are brought here for those kind of purposes know that. And when you say melting, they're going back home, and they're finding other ways to get there. They're finding various ways to get there. This whole infrastructure that the globalists have established in California is doomed, and they know it's doomed. There's no question about it. They have to have the money from China, and that money, that whole spigot's been turned off. So, what is going on in China itself right now?
Well, you know, my thesis was that China, you know, this was a one of the greatest economic booms in history. You took people that might have two bowls of rice, you gave them three bowls of rice, and then you start actually having to pay them. You know, people do not understand that since 2005, you know, American wages are up 37%, you know, right at about inflation. Chinese wages are up 1,100%. 1,100%. All this really got going after the World Trade Organization, and that started to flow through. And that took place in it was agreed to in 2000 and actually became law in 2001. But, you know, clearly China had a great run, only it's not two bowls of rice for wages anymore. Also, they have this thing called the demographic bomb, in that they don't have babies, one baby maybe, and they're now losing workers. I mean, Chinese actually are starting to retire, and you know, when you retire on young people, you know, contributing to a system to pay for you, kind of like Social Security.
Right, right.
They don't have young people.
That's
so how's that going to work?
Yeah, it's not going to work too well. I want to get to the idea of, you talk about two bowls of rice for people in China, but what is it really like for a worker in China, and how much money do they really get paid compared to like the United States? I think this is one of the big advantages. People need to revisit this. This is one of the big advantages of doing you know, free market capitalism, American style in China. What is that like? Is it pretty much slave labor they're working with?
No, actually not. For them, it's, you know, it's a better life than they could have ever imagined. For you, it's slave labor.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't, you know, it's one of the reasons that they're so angry at the Hong Kong is they think those spoiled brats got it better than us. They have no perception of what a normal life is, because remember, all this change took place really over 20, 30 years.
Right.
They don't have a sense of history on how it was. And even back in the days of the, you know, you went from the dynasties where everybody was sort of a coolie to, you know, the days of the Communist Party where everybody was a poorly dressed and poorly fed coolie.
So, well, okay. And again, from perspectives of our listeners, what is a coolie?
A coolie is the worker, you know, that works on the farm and such like that. And he's a little worker bee. You know, you pay him just a little bit. And for China, when, you know, this is an agricultural country who has great problems with food security because it has very small amount of water for a very large country. You look at it in a map, and it's basically brown. There's a little green spot down at the bottom, you know, the southeastern portion, what's called the rice bowl area. You know, there's a green spot, but if you look at it from a satellite, it looks really, really brown. You know, the average Chinese consumes 22 gallons of water a day per capita, and the average American consumes 150. I would call that a slight difference.
Yeah.
And of course, everything about water is about food, right?
That's right. Yep, that's exactly right.
You pour water in the desert, and after a while, you're going to get some flowers. Same thing to do with when it comes to land and water. But for China, you know, sometimes it rains and sometimes it doesn't rain.
Yeah, they're water challenged. There's no doubt about it. But
and when it rains, it often rains too much.
Right. But coolie labor has always actually, I think, been consistent all the way through China, even today. Now, you were telling me about how in some of these cities, how the workers are actually housed. What's that about?
Well, there are two sets of workers. When you talk about China and you talk about, you know, the modern economy and all that and outsourcing and everything, there's two sets of workers. There's the people who have what are called residency permits within a town called a huku, and there are the people who are migrants that come in from another province or another town, and they're called migrants. And the difference, and China has a communist benefit system that has very good benefits, but you only accrue them wherever you have your huku, wherever you have your residence permit. So if you're from the countryside and you're working on the coast in a factory, you're living in a dorm and you're not getting any benefits for the future. You're just getting paid. Now, it's a lot of these are girls that, you know, never got paid anything back on the farm, but your wages in the city are about 150 to 200% what they'd be in the farmland, but you send about a third of your wages back in remittance. So you live in a dorm, you know, very, very compact. You know, it's a better life than it was a better life than back on the farm. But you can never actually have real savings. You can never actually generate wealth because you don't have a residency permit. You might be able to buy a piece of property, but only as a, you know, outsider, not as an insider. So it's always very tenuous.
Now, what about their living conditions while they're working in the factories?
Well, you know, normally you work 6 days a week. You work about 9 hours a day. The difference is that when it's lunchtime in China, they'll put their head down and go to sleep. It's the strangest thing you've ever seen, but that's part of the culture. You know, when they take a break, they go to sleep. They in the middle of the day, they go to sleep. So you go back to your dorm at night, and you might go out for 2-3 hours, and that's the way you live 6 days a week.
Oh, boy.
You only met once again, and you make wages that in overall, Chinese wages are about 29% of U.S. wages. Remember I said overall?
Right, right.
But they don't count the migrants as part of the all.
So, you see how that works? They don't, okay, that's
well, they, you know, I didn't say all. I said overall.
It sounds like California finances is.
Yes, I'm sure that you know the Sacramento could have learned, and of course, you know, they've been envious and wanted to be this for a long time.
Wow, wow! I was hearing all these things about riots, and you'd mentioned that. One point in time, China was having 1,000 riots a day over the economics in the economy of China.
Paul, they're still having 1,000 riots a day. It's a big country, and I say this all the time, is that, you know, just because I say I'm going to pay you doesn't mean I actually pay you. You know, there's a big problem in China in that, you know, big state-owned companies, you know, pay their workers, right? Because they get state-owned banks to finance it. About half of the economy or more, about 60% of the workers work for private companies, and they don't have any access to state-owned banks, so they borrow in what's called the shadow banking system, and it might be 2-3% interest at the local bank, but you pay 15-20%. I mean, this is a lot like, white knuckle lending in the cities in the U.S. back in the turn of the century, the 20th century.
Well, that's pretty interesting. It sounds like. Let me ask you this: when we had this guy who's the chief buyer for PERS, this communist Chinese guy, and he's investing all this money in communist Chinese defense stocks, do they legitimately pay the dividends they're supposed to pay off these stocks, or is it a decision by the Communist Chinese Party not to pay? Because the stocks are owned by the Communist Chinese, not the people, not a private corporation.
Well, remember, all state-owned enterprises are state-owned enterprises. They might sell some stock to you, but that stock is like participation stock. Now, there are real companies. They do real things, and, you know, you can invest in the real stocks, and, you know, maybe it works out. But it's all administered. How is that? You know, in a sense, we're in an administered pandemic right now. If you trust the Chinese to burn down the world with, you know, a coronavirus, would you really trust your savings to them over the next 30 years? I mean, isn't this a little silly?
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
I mean, the good news is it works, it works, it works, and then they take it away.
Right, right, I mean, right.
If you're rolling dice, and you know, you get a seven and win, that's great. But you have the same odds of losing every roll of the dice. So just because you had a couple wins in a row, you know, the fool starts to believe it's, you know, they've somehow mastered the game. No, the game, there's a reason that Vegas is Vegas, because the game is going to catch up to you.
Right.
Same thing with investing in China. The good news is that it may have worked, and it may have worked again. It may have worked again and again. But the bad news is one day they just take your money.
Right. Right. It's all gone. And I think that that's
you
kind
saw
of
that in South Park, right? It's kind of, remember, have you seen the South Park clip?
Yeah.
And it's gone.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, that's what I'm concerned about, is that all these people, because I'm always getting the question asked, and you know this, and you know what my answer always is, based upon people that have PERS, investments in PERS, and, you know, they're public employees, and some of them are retired. You know, am I ever going to get my money out of PERS? And I always say, you know, with New California, yes. With Old California, no. That at some point in time, if you stay with, you know, if there's no New California offering a different thing, completely different thing, then you really do run the risk of course, staying with the old California model and not getting any money out of it. Would that be a fair statement?
My personal belief is that there's going to be a collapse. And when there's a collapse, at first it'll be an economic problem. And then people will say, well, you know, maybe it's going to have some ramifications. And all of a sudden, one day, this organization called Moody's, this credit rating organization, is going to come out and slash the debt of California, which means they can't borrow currently to operate currently. You know, they already can't borrow long-term to operate long-term, because they pretty much maxed that out. So they have to actually, they're not only borrowing for the long-term, which they've already spent, they're now borrowing all the time in the short-term, and one day they'll get downgraded, and that access to cash will go away. And the question is, what do they have to sell? Do you believe that old California has anything that people want to buy? Now, there's some land and some other issues, some development rights, but the bottom line to it is they've created their own worst enemy, because there's no infrastructure. And since they've already spent all the long-term money, there's no way to build infrastructure to support new development, new oil rights. And that's when you really get the collapse. Will they pay off their pension plan in some way, or partial pay? I assume they will, but to do that, they would have to cut their own throats and drastically reduce headcount.
Right. Now, I want to go back to the long-term borrowing that they no longer can do. This involves banks that have told them, no, we're not going to lend.
Banks don't really lend.
They're not the banks, but the financial institutions.
Yeah, well, the financial institution will lend you money. They're always interested in lending you money. They always will say, I can get you money, and then they go find out if they can't. So right now they know they can't, so they don't even offer. You know, you might be able to sell some long-term municipal bonds in California, but generally you're pretty much down to a project bond you know, were very short-term bonds. Nobody trusts California long-term.
Now, this is the point I'm trying to bring across to people, that there is a process that's already in play where California does not have access to long-term money. And it's pretty much self-dictated. They know, the California people know they can't do that. They know that there's anybody out there in the financial world that'll loan to them long-term. And to a state of 40 million people, that is not a good deal, is it?
Okay, we're going to talk about billions here, Paul. You know, the Bubba?
Yeah, Bubba, billion business.
Billions, not millions. Not hundreds of millions, but billions. Right. And we're going to talk for California. Every year they borrow about $35 billion, you know, twice a year because of the tax drop in December and then the tax drop again in April. So, you know, they finance from the start of their fiscal year, which is in July 1st. They actually already borrow out the money through, you know, December, I think it's 10th. And then borrow out the money through April 15th. So they don't have money in the bank for working capital for this year. All their working capital is borrowed. That is not a way you could ever run a business.
This is very similar to what was going on in Orange County with the tax revenue anticipation notes.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's exactly the way they borrow money. You know, I pledge all my taxes in the future and you give me cash now.
Right.
Hopefully I get those taxes and I can pay down that borrowing. Happy, happy, joy, joy. But if there's some problem with that cash coming in, such as right now, it is estimated that used car prices have probably crashed about 20 to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And since nobody actually buys a car anymore, they buy a payment. That payment is built off the residual value of the used car you turn in as your down payment.
Right.
So those down payments have shrunk dramatically. So either people have to pay a higher payment or they don't get a new car.
Right.
That's what's in play. That's going to play out in real estate, in commercial property, and of course in industrial property, which California has a modest amount. But, you know, these numbers don't have to change a lot because you're already borrowing with the concept that they're going to be worth more money in the future. So if they not only turn out to be not worth more money in the future, but the value actually goes down, you have a problem and then you have a metastasized problem.
And that's their problem now.
It's a problem. It's a problem with it before you had the coronavirus. It's a really big problem with China going out, the globalism going out, and then you throw a coronavirus in, and the fact that people are really angry and think it's dangerous to have China control all of your, you know, medical and health supplies. I mean, this game is accelerating, you know, in the opposite direction very, very fast.
Well, when we talk about China going out, so for the listeners to understand, investments from China are leaving California like crazy. They're selling.
Right. The Chinese, sell, sell, sell. The Chinese are having trouble financing their own game.
Right.
And they're having to take, you know, these are big state-owned companies that are really the ones that were over here buying, you know, airport leasing company or airplane leasing companies and buying big assets and rail cars and, you know, container ships and all that kind of stuff. There are 27 super tankers off of Los Angeles right mm-hmm. now, oil super tankers, you know, waiting to unload. People do not understand that California imports its oil. You know, we got rid of oil because we're going to somehow be, you know, carbon neutral. So we essentially import that oil mostly from Iraq and Iran, which is interesting. But, you know, Iran's cut off now. But you have 27 oil tankers just sitting out there because there's no buyer. And these are not no buyers for the United States. These are no buyers for California. So that tells you how big the shrink has been in the California economy.
Boy, that's huge. And again, if you take a look at recent Google pictures of the ports, because, you know, we're looking at bringing in a new California, the port of Long Beach. You know, it's just another, you know, 10 more miles on the coastline there for New California. So they're going to be part of New California, sort of making an announcement for everybody. But the other part of it is that when you take a look at the areas in which they take the sea containers and stack the sea containers, that whole area on both the L.A. and San Pedro, it's empty. All of it's completely empty, and there's no ships in there offloading any cargo containers. And I remember flying over that area in January, and it was just amazing. I saw the tankers, but I saw no sea containers at all being unloaded.
Are you familiar with the concept of crickets?
Yeah, I crush them all the time with my voice.
I'm just saying, Paul, it's kind of crickets there. They got some business, but it's down like 27-30%. And 27-30%, you know, you don't realize how, you know, that these ships turn over very, very fast. So now they're not turning over. They're just slowly being, you know, these are union jobs. And they just slow down in the way they unload them. Slowly down.
But I don't see any sea containers at all. I mean, this is the series of pictures that I've been watching now over the months, ever since I was fascinated at the time when I flew over and said, geez, look at that. There's a big problem down there.
it's actually, you know, I'm just saying the traffic by container numbers, you know, I believe was down about 21%. This month, my estimate was it'd be down about 27%. Here's loaded imports are down by 25.89%, and loaded exports are down by 23.77%. Now, you know, the imports were more than double the exports. So, you know, California loses 23% export container traffic. Remember, that was only half of the equivalent number of containers coming in from China, and a lot of those containers, the loaded exports, they actually send these things back empty because there's no, you know, United States wasn't exporting much to China. China was exporting a lot to California. So, you know, we are early in the game here. You know, these numbers are always trailing statistics. You know that old trailing statistic, Paul? You know, so we're going to wait and see what happens over the next couple of months. And, you know, I'm my 27% number, I think, was probably my 27% number was probably too low. I mean, the number of total empty containers being handled is 44.49%. So the bottom line to it is a lot of empty containers are going back.
Wow. They're mid-ocean. I can imagine that they're being sent back, or
yeah. So the total traffic at the port is down 30.94%. So I'm sorry, folks, to throw a bunch of numbers at you, but you know, at first I said down loaded imports down 26%. That sounds low. empty containers down 45%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That means they can't even afford to send them back. They're just leaving them stacked up.
Yeah. You know, that matches, of course, what we're hearing from our trucker friends. We have numerous people in the New California State Movement that, you know, crisscross the country. And they're telling us that yesterday, in fact, after one of our meetings, I got calls from people, and they're telling us that the traffic that they could see was down at least by 75% on the roads, at least trucks not moving. That's going to continue.
And America is a trucked country.
Absolutely.
One of the challenges that we've had is that, you know, we were a trained country.
Right.
But all those trains basically went into the Midwest. That was the heartland, and then would go out in a star everywhere in America. I mean, that pretty much slowed down tremendously. You know, America's number of manufacturing employment went from 20 million down to about 11 million. Well, that's a 45% decline. But nobody said that was 30 years ago, right? You would have expected that 20 million to be closer to 35 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really 20 million to 11. It's 35 million to 11. It's the number of people in America who make $27 an hour plus get overtime and double time for about another equivalent about another $4 or $5 an hour. You know, you're making $32, $33 an hour on the average in the Midwest. You know, if your wife works in the factory or your husband works in the factory, you know, you're probably talking about making $110,000. I mean, that's what houses cost back there for really nice houses. So you've really, you know, eviscerated America. I love progressives when they talk about the little people. They're in the manufacturing business of creating little people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I want to run this by you, Chris, because this just popped up, on the screen from Fox News. Massive bailout, Supreme Court rules, government must pay insurers enrolled in Obamacare.
Okay, I don't know that ruling, but it's, you know, we're probably, you know, the Supreme Court also is political. You know, right now is a very hard time for everybody. You know, and the idea you're going to cut off insurance, I don't know. I think it was all a mistake. You know, rates are, the insurance costs, your average insurance premiums are up, you know, by more than 100%, 125%,
130%. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know that ruling yet.
Here's another one, though, and this was the topic I was going to talk about later as we progress through our interview here. But Tyson Food Boss has grim warning about food supply, and this is it says coronavirus forces farmers to destroy their crops, and because they don't have anybody to go out in the fields and work. And I know that for a fact because I was talking to certain people yesterday about this whole thing. And so now we're hearing from Tyson Foods, and it says threatens the meat. It says chairman of Tyson Foods has issued a stark warning to Americans following the shuttering of multiple meat processing plants across the nation. And of course this is something of big concern, and this matches right in with the trucking industry. And what my truckers have been telling us is that this is not going well, that these meat supply companies have been definitely shutting down, and there's no way in which this is all going to come back in any near future. And also the other part of it that, you know, that is a big problem is that there's nobody out there, harvesting any of the food in the fields.
Well, you know, Paul, they always talk about there's not enough workers. You know, there's not enough slave workers. You pay people more, they'll come work at it. You know, you get better protective equipment, they'll come work at it. You know, this is under their current situation, there are a lot of Americans who are going to next month need money desperately. You know, unemployment is not going to pay their bills, is not going to take care of their kids. They need to actually work. About 50% of the hourly people in America are not working right now. That is that means there's the great reserve of labor is huge. And, you know, if they pay enough in the fields, people will go pick those crops and grow those crops. You're just going through a transition right now. A lot of those crops being plowed under were actually going to be sold to restaurants. They were specialty crops,
right?
The eggs and the tomatoes and things like that. They weren't markets. The markets already had their business. Market sales are up 27%. You know, market food sales are up 38%.
Well, he says in the article that, to quote, millions of animals, chickens, pigs, and cattle will be depopulated because of the closure of our processing plant. And the food supply chain is breaking, wrote John H. Tyson, Tyson Foods, chairman of the board. And in recent weeks, Tyson Foods has been forced to temporarily pause operations at a number of plants following outbreaks of COVID-19. In addition to meat products, this is a serious food waste issue, Tyson claimed. Farmers across the nation simply will not have anywhere to sell their livestock to be processed. And when they could feed the nation, millions of animals, chickens, pigs, and cattle will be depopulated because of the closure of our processing plant. The food supply chain is breaking.
I understand the words he's saying, but America came into this as one of the top productions of meats you know, in the last 10 years. There's a lot of people having a hard time. I understand that you've had plants closed because people are in close contact working and, you know, processing plants. You need business people, get in there. You need engineers and re-engineer the plants. We'll get them back up.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. I mean, you get now China, on the other hand, you know, they've killed over half of all the pigs in China with African swine flu, a fever, and they're lying about sick animals there. You got it coming back. So, you know, I understand it's going to be tough. We're going to get through all that. The biggest issue is that food is a sideshow. That's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is people need jobs, they need to work, and they need to get back to work.
Right, right. That's the bigger issue. They need to get out and about and start moving around the countryside. The issue that comes up, you know, I want to, you know, look at this in a pragmatic standpoint, is the possibility of terrorism in this country. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we do a pretty good job of managing this country. You know, terrorism obviously hit us hard. You know, we've learned to adjust on that. The way jobs are right now, I would think that if you wanted to try to go, you know, destroy a factory or something like that and the people caught you, you'd get a worse pain than the government prosecuting you. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be watching out for each other now. If nothing else, this has absolutely united Americans to understand that we're not in the world together. Globally, they're not our friends, and you know, there's no love there. They've been using us, and now they're losing us. All of this you're paying a price for. What was it really worth globalism to have 4 or 6 months of this kind of lockdown? How much upside did you get?
Yeah, I think the notion of globalism and people, you know, thinking it's a good thing, that's fast disappearing and will continue to go as certainly as the weeks progress and things get a little bit more tougher. Okay, but what about the next part of that in getting out, telling people to get out in defiance of all the stuff that's going on from Governor Newsom's orders to everybody else's orders, silly stuff going on right now. And now tag on to that the longer we stay socially isolated, the weaker our own immune systems are going to become.
Well, you know, there is a God, right? There is a plan. There is a God. I know progressives have a hard time understanding that. We're not just, you know, mammals in the on the Discovery Channel. but you know, there is a system here. Interesting. Did you know that the oceans are warming? Paul, how could the oceans be warming under global warming if you have less factories running and less particulate in the air? But the oceans are warming.
Shocking. Maybe the sun has something to do with that.
All right.
And saying.
What happened this weekend? The sun came out, right?
Shocking, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at the flu, you know, influenza is the greatest murderer on the planet. Not only does it comes usually 2-3 times a year to most communities, and it would slaughter all of us, but then the sun comes out and it dies in the sun. You know, coronavirus lasts less than 2 minutes in direct sun and less than 4 minutes in indirect sun. Now, inside, you know, in a dark room with, you know, tinted glass and all that kind of stuff, it can last for 20 days sometimes. But, you know, the biggest enemy of coronavirus is UV light. It's hilarious to me that, you know, people are trying to talk smack on Trump because he said he'd heard a presentation. They're actually, if you want to get your items disinfected, they have UV light little phrase you put in if you want to disinfect, yeah. you know, things like computers or things that multiple people use where you're in very important labs. You put your laptop in there at night and UV lights it and make sure that it's all disinfected for the next morning. They've had those for, what, 30 years?
Right.
They talked about putting essentially bars into your lungs for people instead of using ventilators, and they would put UV light in your lungs and actually kill the virus. and you'd think that the left just went bonkers on it. It was less than a month ago, New York was talking about sharing ventilators. Nobody's talking about sharing anything because we have too many ventilators already.
Well, they just overly exaggerated the numbers too. So,
well, no, but I mean, in their world, if you're a progressive, death, destruction, these are positive economic statistics. They're good for your life.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the idea of taking something and putting it in your lung. There are other bacteria and that are necessary. There's a fauna that exists inside your lungs that's pretty necessary, that the UV light could kill all that, and of course be fatal to the person who has that in there. But that's just a thought. That's just my thoughts.
But Paul, by the time you're going to be on a ventilator, 90% of the people go on a ventilator die.
Right, I know.
Let me see. Right to try, no right to try. The left wants to tell you that you've got to go through the entire FDA and take 3 years to, and then you'll be evaluated, and we'll talk about whether, how much you can pay for this thing. Remember, we outsourced 90% of the inputs to making pharmaceuticals basically to China and India. I mean, that's suicidal.
Yeah, well, that's all going to change too. That's all going to come back. What's on tap for what's going on in Epoch Times and the other things that you're writing for right now?
Well, I'm actually writing about reshoring, Paul. And the biggest story nobody's talking about is reshoring. This was already happening prior to, the pandemic. Trump came along and accelerated the process, but it was going to happen anyway. I mean, economically, as I said, wages are up 1,100% in China. I mean, they actually want to get paid, and they don't have all these workers because they had abortions for all those babies.
Shocking.
I mean, they thinned the herd, right? Yeah. So, you talk about thinning the old ones. No, they just massively thinned the herd, right?
Yeah.
And that became a way of life. Now that way of life, you've got all these older people in China, and they expect to get their retirement that they've been promised and paid into. That's kind of like California, right?
Yeah, it's exactly like California.
You made these promises, and I paid into it. It isn't, Paul, that your investments didn't perform. It's that they didn't put the money in to have investments to perform. They lied about the rate of return you're going to get is 8% compounded every year. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They got a return of around 4, which was not a bad historic return, but compounded, given the number of dollars there, they used that. They told you they were going to get something. They actually charged you in your they take it out of your paycheck every month. Do you really think that money got into the account?
Oh, no. One of the things I wanted to talk about very quickly here is that you sent me this article. It says, Coronavirus Color Revolution, and California declares nation statehood as Trump moves to quell mutiny on the bounty. It's a new article that came out, and it was written by Strategic Culture Foundation, Joaquin Flores. And it says here that, and we covered this when this came out because of New California regards. Bloomberg published a stunning piece on April 9th promoting the secession of California from the U.S. in an op-ed by Francis Wilkerson titled "Gavin Newsom Declares California a Nation State," which resurrected John C. Calhoun in a neo-Confederate argument favoring nullification. And Bloomberg is part, this says in the article, Bloomberg is part of a strategy to prevent Trump from a second term by way of legal means by an election, and has now brought to the fore the specter of secession or nullification. This does not mean we should normally expect some announcement by Governor Newsom that California Republic is an independent nation state, yet amazingly, it has been almost verbatim said this way. The Bloomberg article details how California Governor Newsom has begun using the term and also related legal constructions in discussing how California will manage the coronavirus response to its own terms. So this is the thought. It's seated right now, and this is a recent article about it. Your thoughts on this?
Well, Paul, you know, you're talking about there are four states that are in trouble. Real big trouble. And those states are New York, Connecticut, Illinois, and California. New Jersey's a mess, but it's just more of a mess. But, you know, the ones who've played the game the most, played the progressive game the most, and won from the progressive game are now going over the falls. And, you know, if they want to have their social justice wonderland, you know, without federal money, it's been federal money that has driven California. Trump has the right to cut them off. He won that Supreme Court lawsuit, you know, to take dollars away for sanctuary state. He could cut them off tomorrow. Now, you know, it would be a little painful in the middle of a crisis like this, but if you didn't have the coronavirus, Trump would have already cut off California. So I understand that it's, you know, ego is big there, Newsom, but he don't get out much. He's never really been in the real world. The real world is if Trump cuts off the check, how are they gonna make not the next year, but the next week?
That's again, I wanted to reemphasize this with the public because, you know, being involved with the new California state movement, you can almost start to see how this is all gonna play out, especially in light of people like Mike Huckabee as a player. Now we're going to be entering in with Trey Gowdy and some other folks and that involved with New California. We're going to see some major shifts towards New California. It's really sort of at the president's discretion as to what he's going to do with Newsom at this point, isn't it?
Well, that's right. He can just say, I need to cut these payments off right now to evaluate. He could ask for a legal evaluation and just short check them. He's got that power. He's president of the United States. He was elected. I mean, I understand that Newsom, you know, would rather that you have vote by mail. So, you know, I think wasn't it Trotsky? It says it doesn't matter who votes, it's who counts the votes.
Well, it was, it was either Lenin or Stalin or Trotsky, one of those guys. That's what they said, right?
They're all the same, you know. John Calhoun, you know, he was a secessionist. You know, you're going to have himself the Confederacy, you know, but at the end of the day, California gets money, doesn't give money. This idea that you're a contributor, I understand how they do that arithmetic. Trust me, it's California gets 33% of all welfare payments and 31% of all Obamacare payments. That sounds more than the 11% of the population.
Right, right. So I guess you can say that at the president's discretion right here, especially with the Emergency Powers Act, he's got all the authority in the world to do what he needs to do to pull the string on Gavin Newsom.
I mean, Gavin Newsom is like, you know, it's like one of those chatterboxes you buy and it just keeps talking until you turn the batteries run out. You know, you take away his electrical, you know, that the money that comes in every week from the feds, that's his batteries.
Right.
Take those batteries away and see how long, you know, Newsom plays that game.
Well, I think it's time to finish up the budget for New California and get that off to people and start becoming a state. And I think that's exactly what we're doing. Anyway, Chris, thanks for being with us today and taking your time to explain this to the public and people across the country can actually see what's actually happening financially and what's going to be happening in the next couple of weeks. And I know that you're going to put your hands on the crystal ball sometime in the next few days because you have that blackened room with the glowing crystal ball where you get all your predictions and information. Anyway, thanks a lot for being with us.
Always fun, Paul. Nice to be a winner in New California. If you're not a member, folks, you got to get on board. This is going to be the greatest fun you're ever going to have.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Chris. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio today. Very, very informative. Dave Hodges and, of course, all the stuff going on in New California and California and throughout the nation. I mean, big stuff. But anyway, stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.